I want to look at something today with you. That I think if we understand, even to some extent, that the limit of our present view is not the limit of our possibilities, that we can begin to do what we are meant to do, and that all of us, I'm assuming all of us that are joining me here and online when I speak, we realize to some extent that we have, let's just say, a set of possibilities that far transcend the daily worries and doubts that we all go through, and that this world as a seems to be like a hatching ground for horrible thoughts and feelings and troubled relationships, misunderstanding. That the world that we look to presently to help us understand and ideally transcend the limitations in our present consciousness can't do it. I don't think, at least in my 73 years, I can't remember a time when there was so much tumult, so many problems, so much anger, so much disparity, confusion. And I would just say at the outset here that if you are confused at all about this world, it isn't that you are somehow a captive of a confusing world, but rather you have yet to make the discovery that confusion is the result of a mistaken relationship that we have with ourselves, not with those people or the world around us that we blame that confusion on. And we'll see before our time is up here this morning, this afternoon, or whatever time it is that you're joining. You'll see the truth of that, and you'll see the way out of it. Because if we can just, you know, collect ourselves long enough and be honest enough, we can see that there is a descending line, not an ascending line, a descending line, when it comes to the consciousness of this world. We have all of these new laws, all of these conditions that are being created to do what? And we can, if we can pull back at all, we can recognize that somehow or other we're trying to legislate or control circumstances that the more we try to control them, the more out of control they become. It happens to be a law that the task for an aspirant, anyway, is to start recognizing, at least to see in the world, if you can't see it in yourself. I've been speaking about this. Consciousness can't overcome itself. Why do you think that men and women, and we are increasingly burdened by this law and that law, what do you think those laws are all about? They are to create through force and through fear some manner of control, so that it would seem that the more laws I live under, or that I'm put under, or that I give myself, for instance, a law like I shouldn't be like that, the law that you shouldn't be this way. All of this government, St. Paul spoke of it. We don't struggle with flesh and blood, but with powers and principalities, with interior governments that, because they are divided and cannot stand, they must consistently make laws. They must come up with new ideas, new beliefs that by their very nature always break down. want to set the stage so you and I can look with some honesty at the fact that no matter how many ways in which we try to legislate our own life, forget what others are legislating, this worry and this doubt that we live with doesn't go away. And the more we try to make it go away by going here or doing this or giving ourselves that or creating some new discipline by which we're going to meet these problems, the more we do that, the more conflict builds inside of us, the more fear there is. Why? Because we're not intended to overcome our own consciousness. It's never worked. If it were possible for this consciousness with its conflict to overcome itself, to transcend itself by itself, do you really think there would be still wars on this planet? If this consciousness was capable of conquering its appetites and desires, do you think that there would still be all of this greed and this self-centered identity nonsense that's going on where everybody has to be special? If this consciousness could transcend itself, would we still be at odds with our brothers and sisters? Or would we have transcended a consciousness that judges everything and that fears almost anyone that stands in the way of some image we have of ourselves? I'm asking you to look at it. It's no good if you don't see what I'm trying to show you. Because if we can begin to recognize that, then we can see that every time we have this reaction to some unwanted moment, what is the reaction? What is it telling us to do? It's telling us to gather ourselves and to do something to fix something that we don't like and don't want. I shouldn't be like that. Something will judge us. Someone shouldn't be this way. We judge them. And then what do? We try to control or change ourselves or that person according to what? To some new image or some refurbished plan we have that's going to free us? All of that has to go away. And nobody can take it from you. Christ said, sell all. Who's going to convince you that what has to be given up is this relationship, this unconscious relationship we have with an identity-forming consciousness that never stops saving itself by coming up with the next thing it'll do or become in order to get rid of the worry or doubt that, by the way, was sown into that consciousness by itself every time it tried to figure out how to save itself. If it can't be overcome, and it can't, and you have to see this, I can't, what am I going to do? Then what does that leave us? I spoke about this at great length on Wednesday, I believe. It leaves us with the understanding that if consciousness can't overcome itself, then the only possibility that exists and that we can feel and still feel is for us to outgrow our own consciousness. Outgrow my consciousness. Again, we know that for instance, people say, well, I must learn to accept the world. You and I both know that the more we accept the world the way it is, the deeper runs the corruption in this world. We're not meant to accept what in our hearts of hearts we know is not right for us or anyone else. And anything, any identity, any form of belief, any form of so-called religion, whether it's a political religion or so-called spiritual religion, anything that sets me against my brother or my sister, those that I know, anything that causes me to hate is not in my favor. And we know that surrendering, in quotes, the way that we think of it now, surrendering ourselves, meaning I'm just not going to fight with these these surges, these urges, this anger anymore. The world is replete now with all of this idea that somehow we're meant to just let it all out and then everything will be great. Surrendering to desire enables the consciousness that gives rise to that desire. So it can't be about a surrendering. It can't be about accepting, because all of those are forms ultimately of enabling the consciousness, creating the problem. So how can a consciousness that's creating the pain, the suffer, the problem, creating the enemy, how can that consciousness ever heal itself? It can't. But there is something that's right in front of us all this time. And it's this the capacity that we have as human beings to outgrow ourselves. You've heard the expression, as above, so below. I touched on this again Wednesday night. When you outgrow a shirt, did you outgrow it? Or by a fact of physical life forever giving birth to a new form of itself, continually outgrows the form that it has? And key here is that the form that we outgrow, we can only outgrow by entering into another form. So that when I start out as a boy or a girl, I grow into the body of an adult. If there weren't the body of an adult hidden latent in the body of the child would have nothing to grow into. And so that we can see, if we can use our minds at all, that everything that grows, grows by leaving what it has been and entering into what it is created to be in another order of time. So that through the passage of time, we outgrow the form that we're in. And by the way, part of outgrowing that form, though we don't want to hear it, is that the form is going to die. So that we are also intended to outgrow death. But we don't outgrow the form or our attachment or our identity with it, our identification with it, because we don't understand that there are parts of us that want to cling, that want to remain. God, the money, the waste, the pain that men and women spend trying to fix their face or change their body so it looks like what the world says it should look like. This is the highest form of insanity. And by the way, the greatest source of pain in a human being, because he or she is forever at war with their own consciousness. A consciousness that is a captive of an image of itself and that wants to keep the image while the body is going through what God has designed it to go through, which is to enter into form after form until form no longer serves. And then it enters into another order of life the way it's supposed to. But we're not educated. We're not given the means, the understanding of how we are intended to outgrow death. Because what is it that we go through? You tell me. You ever had an addiction of any kind? You've ever gone through something with another human being? And then you realize you treat them as you've always treated them. You treat yourself the same way you've always treated yourself. And that nothing changes except for the depth and breadth of our culture, of our religions, of our fanatical political parties telling us it's okay, just justify it. Just get it so that you can live with it. And then we'll make more laws so it becomes more livable. No, the more laws we live under that are the creation of this consciousness, the more we're a captive of the consciousness that has to create laws to hide its own corruption, its own misunderstanding. So I'm getting to this idea, if you'll go with me, that just like we can see that within the acorn is the oak, and that all the acorn does, according to natural laws, is just go through the permeations, the iterations of its own existence, gradually growing into what it was created to grow into. It fulfills its purpose by growing into what it was created to do. So it is with us. We are supposed to, we are created, not just to outgrow the form because the form will go through the changes it does. And God help the poor human being who going through whatever those changes are. And I'm talking about finding out that you're going to die. You've got cancer. Something's happened to your body. You can't do what you used to do. We're so full of lament over what we are being taken through that it never dawns on us that there's a higher reason behind outgrowing form and function of our physicality. But we can't outgrow what we don't understand. And the reason that we can't understand not just the fact that this body is intended to educate us about something that is beyond it, but that our consciousness, the way it's presently constituted, is a captive of itself. Why? Because it has all of this identification, has all of these things that it believes it must either keep in place or continue, in quotes, to perfect, so that the more it can perfect its image of what life is meant to be, the safer it feels, except there's a caveat, isn't there? And what is it that any of us fear other than the very kingdom that we have built for ourselves turning into something that's now collapsing around us? And we don't know how to use that. We just get back and try to get in that struggle again and fix everything. So what am I trying to get to here? Essentially, this consciousness looks at life really in just one of two ways, and it's missing the third way. First, most of us look at life as something that is happening to us. This is based in a duality, a mind that is forever separate from the world that sees around it. So life is doing things to me. And by and large, if you had to measure according to that measure, if you had to measure it, is it happening good or bad? And most of us would agree, most of the time, we wish that what was happening to us wasn't happening to us, most of the time. And so we're afraid of life because on the other side, a lot of us look at life as that, well, life, you know, I am a creation and stuff is happening to the creatures here. And it seems like God doesn't care if there's a God at all, because why would God allow this and that, all of these things happening to human beings, happening to this consciousness? Why? And on the other side, we would never ask, why is this happening to me, unless the me it was happening to wasn't identified and attached to some idea that it got along the way, that life wasn't just happening to me, life is going to go through me, and I'm a creator. So yeah, I'm a creation, but I'm a creator too. And I don't like what creation's doing, so I'm going to get busy and create for myself a kingdom that can't be acted on by this greater creation, but which, by the way, you have no authority over at all. You can't change what happens in the moment. So we have this relationship predicated on things that are happening to us, we want or don't want. And according to want or don't want, then we go out and we try to make life into what we want or don't want it to be. And if you can see it with me at all, that's called a war. Things come in, they disturb this consciousness that is clinging to identities, images, plans. And when the consciousness is disturbed, the way it deals with the conflict between what? Between what is and what should be. And that's how we live. There's what is, and then there's what should be. And when what is what should be, I'm happy as a clam. But I'm in conflict the majority of the time because I don't like what is. It doesn't line up with what should be. We're missing the third part. Yes, life is happening to us. And yes, life is intended to move through us. But these things don't make any sense until we understand that life is happening for us, and that's the overriding understanding. That's what's missing from our life that keeps us in conflict with what comes our way, that keeps us trying to change what comes our way, because we don't understand that built into all of that movement is the possibility of changing the way we view our life, so that instead of the limit of our present view produced by our present understanding, our present understanding forever opens up a new view of life, where my new understanding allows me to look at this moment I don't want and to outgrow the consciousness that doesn't want it. So then the moment isn't a struggle between what the will of something far greater than I comes to act on I. Then that moment becomes a marriage between a possibility latent that I'm meant to grow into, and then outgrowing that consciousness, I escape the prison of feeling like life is doing something terrible to me. But to do that, we need new understanding, which is all I ever talk about. It's said that when Edison used to walk into his laboratory, and he had all of these assistants, like they say, I don't know, I haven't read the full thing, but like 30, 40, 50 assistants, everybody working on experiments of his ilk, some on their own, of course, along the lines that he would always walk in, and the first thing he would say is, "What did you learn today?" That was always the first thing. "What did you learn today?" Let me tell you a story to illustrate some of this, because I have two or three, and I want to put them together so we can understand each other. Here is a reporter. I use the idea of a reporter quite a bit in my talks, because the reporter represents the higher part of you and I that is seeking to understand certain things that aren't understandable presently. And so he knows he has to go into the story of the person that he's investigating so that he can learn what it is that that person learned that he might add to his own understanding in some way, expand his view. So he hears about a CEO who somehow went through something. Nobody quite knows, because he was like the worst company in the world to work for. Nobody of his employees. And then that company, on its way down the Dow Jones, suddenly goes through this big turnaround, and it becomes the only company worth working for, and everything goes great. Just a metaphor of one direction changing into another. And so he goes to the CEO, and he says, I'm curious. What happened? And primarily, because I think this all circulates around you, revolves around you. How did you do that? I mean, for the longest time, your company disappointments, meaning company, my life filled with challenges and disappointments, and the fear, the loss, the doubt, all the things that your own employees, meaning our parts of ourselves, everyone around you, within you. How did you, what caused this change? And the CEO says, well, since you've asked, and I think you're sincere, I'll tell you, I knew that I had to have a certain kind of surgery. And the reporter looks at him, surgery? What has surgery got to do with a complete turnaround in your own character and your own company? And the CEO looks at him and says, no, I don't think you understand. It was an operation I had to take out on myself, do on myself. You operate on yourself. What do you mean? CEO said, I had to cut out all of the can'ts in my life. I had to cut out all of the can'ts in my life. C-A-N-T-apostrophe-S. All of the can'ts. We've reached a point where we don't understand that it's the very things in life that we don't want that in their appearance create in a consciousness attached, dependent, and clinging to particular conditioned identities developed over time. This personality formed as a buffer between ourselves and an uncaring world where we're just some haphazard creation. And then a personality developed in order to justify and explain why it is that we can't live up to the very images that it's identified with. That consciousness as it is cannot understand that the conditions that come to it, and they're every day in 1,000 different ways, and that suddenly bring up what you and I know. Can I feel worry or doubt? Can I feel inadequate? Can I feel anger without first, in one way or another, feeling some kind of resistance to what the moment has brought me? And the answer is I can't. If you study it at all, again, new understanding. What is this innate knee-jerk resistance to the way you looked at me? To the fact that I've got to go and lead a meeting someplace, or I want to learn something and I'd like to go back to school. I'd like to educate, whatever it is. The minute that any thought comes about growing some way, resistance. And why? That resistance does not want you, that consciousness does not want me to explore the fact that the moment of that resistance is in fact the way in which fear in that consciousness hides itself. This is what the CEO was telling the reporter. I had to cut out all the can'ts. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't get up this morning. I can't go to sleep. I can't take on that new responsibility. I can't meet that challenge. I can't educate myself. I can't change myself. I'm an addict. I've been trying for 50 years to get rid of this anger, and I failed across the board. I took every known path, and that's the problem, you see. Because the world that tells you how to get rid of anger is the same world that creates a consciousness clinging to what it does, fearing what challenges it, and then bringing up frustration and anger as the way to get past that moment. No negative state takes us past the moment that it resists. The negative state is the past it resists and recreates itself. And there's nothing more negative for the willing soul than to suddenly hear and feel, I can't. I'll tell you what I can't means to us. It means I will not let this moment teach me what it has come to teach me. We're so busy distracting ourselves. Imagine a humanity that has fallen to the point that it actually avoids the divine will, the perfect movement of the cosmos intended to perfect and reconcile every last creation through allowing it to leave its former form and to enter into a new one, allowing it to recognize the source of fear always has something to do with this mind that doesn't want to see itself fail. I have an image of myself. I'm strong, I'm wise, I'm intelligent, I'm good, I'm loving, I'm compassionate. And by the way, every image that you have of yourself is not the source of the strength it pretends to be. It is the source of the fear that appears anytime some condition comes and threatens that image to that it might see suddenly it's nothing like it's imagined itself to be. Every crisis that we face begins with an identity crisis. What does this mean? What's going to happen to me? Look what the world is doing to me. Look at all that I've done, and it's not enough. I'm still angry. I'm still afraid. No, we still don't get it. It's happening for me. Just like this moment, as I'm speaking to you, is happening for me. And it happens to be happening for you too. If I'm able to understand that, what was it that Einstein, Albert Einstein, said that experience is the real source of knowledge, that the real source of knowledge is experience. Not experience leads to knowledge, because in one way it does. I have certain experiences and I gain understanding about what I'm doing physically. But when it comes to our spiritual life, experience is what gives us knowledge. And all knowledge of any value when it comes to this transformation and outgrowing this consciousness is self-knowledge. So that it is self-knowledge that is gained through a new kind of experience based on a relationship that we're intended to have in this moment, where we recognize something goes, I'm too tired. I have too much to do. Nobody understands why I am the way I am. I can't possibly. Everything about our life, if you just look at it with me, can't is a locked door. And what locks that door is a consciousness that does not want to be explored. Can't is a locked door, and it is locked by a consciousness that does not want to be explored. This consciousness, in one respect, cannot explore itself, but within it is the capacity to recognize, here comes something happening to me. I got to get up in the morning and I got to do this work. I got to go later and take care of some kind of business. I cannot escape what is coming to me. And what is coming to me is part of a far greater pattern than what I believe are my individual choices. Because you cannot separate anything that you are from what everyone else is. Everything is working together in a certain system intended, by the way, to be a process of educating us to our relationship to that broader consciousness. But I can't is immediate separation, isn't it? You look at it. I can't learn a new golf swing. I've tried. I can't. No. What you can't do presently is see that there's something in you that believes, which is the definition of sanity, doing the same thing over and over again will lead to something new. To transcend this can't consciousness, I have to be willing to lead it. I have to be willing to explore what it doesn't want to explore. And we have in our own lives validation. And just to get this clear, everybody, it isn't that, yes, I can, because then I go in with this idea of myself as someone who can accomplish something. Please God, we're not trying to accomplish something. Because you can't set out to accomplish something without the image of what you want to accomplish. And you wouldn't have the image of what you want to accomplish if there weren't an identity established behind it, fearful that if I don't accomplish it the way I intend to, then I've failed. We accomplish the purpose of this life by allowing and seeing life do within us what it is intended to do, which is to reveal to us that we are a part of what life is bringing, we are a part of what life is dying, and we are a part of what is life is bringing into us as a new creature in the moment. life only happens for me consistently when I see that life is good consistently. And most of us don't see life as good constantly or consistently because we look at life through a jaundiced eye that always looks at life and measures what life is doing according to our opinions or our beliefs or our demands upon it. And how can I, who have all of these demands, these images of myself, these identities, how can I, who is so captured by that, ever look at a moment that challenges any of it and think that that's for me? It's impossible. I understand that life is for me when I understand that life never endingly brings into me that which stirs me. And in the stirring of myself, the capacity to see what is stirred in me. And in the capacity to see the consciousness that is stirred, including what it clings to and what it doesn't want and its anger, and to see all of the content of this consciousness that it has no interest in exploring itself, to agree to allow that all to be brought up into my consciousness where I can't hide from myself that level of myself anymore, and I must give it up. Not because I'm spiritual, not because I want to, but because I see that that's what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to outgrow that. Then the struggle of a new order begins. You and I, we don't have, unfortunately, the smallest clue that all that we consider ourselves to be is essentially the scrapyard, the remnants of a consciousness that has consistently proven itself unable to heal itself. But we can outgrow it. We can outgrow it. It's built into you to outgrow it. I told a story several weeks back, ever so quickly, about a boy who loved this favorite ride at this big amusement park, and then one day his dad, not understanding why he's reluctant to get back on the ride, he says, "What's wrong, son? This is your favorite ride." And the boy says, "I just saw for the first time that where you get off on the ride is right next to where you get on. I'm not really going anywhere. I always thought I was going somewhere," because of course he was excited and filled with sensation and the promise and the thrill, even looking forward after a while to seeing the same things. Do you remember that on rides? You'd go through the ride and you'd look forward to seeing the same thing on the ride because it was part of your excitement. Don't you remember that? I do. Oh, this is the part where I shrink down to the size of an atom. And then one day you realize nothing's happening. I've outgrown the need for that experience, for that sensation. I've outgrown the need to be me. Then that's where it starts. I've outgrown the need to be afraid. Not because the fear isn't there anymore, but because I can see that the fear is always trying to figure out how to protect itself. I never knew that fear was trying to protect itself and that fear can't protect a fearful consciousness. How was I ever going to know that? Until at last I was able to see. So that instead of those moments where that consciousness says, "You can't, you shouldn't, you won't, it'll never happen. Don't go into that. Don't risk that. There's too much to risk. Don't do that." Instead, now you understand. You've been listening to something that's killing you, not saving you. You've been listening to something that's got your soul in such a set of bindings that it can't even begin to move. But by the grace of God, we have the capacity to shatter that. And we shatter it by seeing. I shatter the remnant of my impatience by seeing the pain of it, not by letting it point to the problem that says that's what's causing it to me. And Dean, don't use language like that on this site. Don't do that. We are intended to have a relationship with an interior life that proves itself over and over again to us, so that we see through our experience what we couldn't understand before. And every time I see through my experience what I couldn't understand before, suddenly I have outgrown the old understanding. And you mustn't think to yourself, Superman leaps and bounds and all that business. This is a tenuous task, a difficult chore, because it requires me meeting over and over and over again a part of myself that has met life for me. And I don't want anything to meet life for me anymore. I want to meet life. And no one can teach you that. I can't teach you that. But we begin to want to meet life, to have experience that isn't conditioned by all of the knee-jerk reactions, that isn't predetermined by an identity trying to protect itself. To meet life directly simply requires that when life brings the moment to you and there's a disturbance, let me look for something new in that moment. You want to know an exercise? Let me look for something new in this moment. Not let me look for what I know about this moment. Not let me look for what I need to do to get past this moment. What am I being shown new in this moment about me? And then do not judge what you see. Leave it all impersonal. And you keep your eyes, the whole of your awareness present like that. Eventually, one day it'll be with you all the time, so that you will always be seeing something new. You will always be outgrowing what you were, and you will understand the real meaning of rebirth. And it isn't that non-judgment is the key. The key is seeing where it is that we judge. I don't have to think to myself, I'm not going to judge this if I see in the moment that in judging it, it's hurting me. It's limiting me to the possibility of someone who's superior and now judging this. No, let's just keep it clean, simple. What can I see right now that I've never seen before? Right now, in this moment, right now while I'm talking to you. And don't look for windmills and dragons. What's this movement? What is all this? And leave it alone, because it will grow into something new. And if you're there with it while you're watching it, as it grows into something new, you will grow into a new human being repeatedly. I went on a little bit longer than usual. Join me if you can tomorrow. I speak online. Go to the profile. Find me. Let's do our work.